School shooting threats are the single most prevalent youth violence crimes that exist in our country. Colorado is no new victim to these threats, as a nationwide attempt to disrupt school conduct successfully shut down multiple Colorado public schools on September 9th. This anonymous threat was spread through WhatsApp and was immediately shared with authorities, which prompted thorough investigations. Luckily, no conclusive proof was found that the threat was a legitimate attempt. But what is Colorado and our nation prepared to do in these situations?
The Office of School Safety is part of the Department of Public Safety. And one of the other divisions in the Department of Public Safety is the Colorado Information Analysis Center, or what is known as the Fusion Center. So we always make sure when those kinds of threats come out that the Fusion Center is aware of them as well, because they're directly involved with the law enforcement and they can always check them out much more quickly than probably even our schools or our local law enforcement officers.
That was Chris Harms, director of the Office of School Safety, or OSS, in Colorado, a branch of the Department of Public Safety. What Chris Harms found out about the recent chain of threats was that this wasn't the first time these exact threats were dispersed.
We were all seeing, in some cases, the exact same threats that actually originated years ago.
It is often the first reaction of many community members to quickly disperse information about any suspicious activity to as many people as possible. It is a very well-meaning attempt, but it commonly does more harm than good.
We're also encouraging our schools to remind both their students, their staff, and particularly their parents, that if they get one of these threats on social media or they see it somewhere else, that they please make sure that they check it out before they send it off to more people, because we know that that's what happened earlier this year, that everybody was getting those threats and sending them to everybody on their social media site and before anything was verified. And so instead, we want them to either check with their school district's school safety team, or they can send them to Safe to Tell, and Safe to Tell will double check them.
Luckily, the OSS is very well equipped in addressing threats targeted to our communities and have been developing resources for years. The OSS has been actively engaging the public to inform us about all the resources available for school districts to combat potential safety concerns. The annual Safe School Summit is one of the most notable events hosted by the OSS. The 2024 summit, having taken place on October 17th and 18th, provided a variety of keynote speakers, one of whom educated on the appropriate tactics to reintegrate justice-engaged students into society and schools.
We have about 20,000 Colorado students who have been justice engaged, and it's often difficult for them to get back into school and to finish their education. So this bill will help them be able to do that.
The Colorado Interagency Working Group on School Safety is another committee in the OSS that held a meeting September 24th, a meeting that had long been discontinued.
The Office of School Safety has hired a resource specialist who will be creating a website where all those resources will be housed, and it will be that person's responsibility to keep those resources updated as we move forward. That working group also came up with a group of recommendations for site and physical building safety, and that has also been distributed to the schools. And we also expect that group to take a look at how all the state agencies are evaluating the work that they're doing in the schools and whether or not there's a way to standardize some of that evaluation and share that data among the state agencies. So the work will continue monthly going forward.
Luckily, this working group is now a vital constituent and is facing some great success.
Originally, one of the things we found was that we were not duplicating services, and we were indeed, through five agencies, supplying over 160 resources to our schools.
The crisis unit of the OSS is a key branch responsible for training school personnel to appropriately respond to critical incidents. Katie Garner is the manager of the crisis unit, offering a symposium that anybody can tune into coming soon.
This year we are doing our first ever annual crisis response symposium as well, which will be completely virtual on December 3rd. And we have four keynote speakers. And in fact, we have someone from CU coming to talk about how to send out messages after a death has occurred, whether on campus, higher ed, and some notes for K-12 as well.
The OSS also features the Resource Center, which provides tools, consultation, training, and technical assistance to the public and to public safety professionals. The OSS has recently partnered with CU Boulder's Center for the Study and Prevention of Violence, or CSPV, to refine something called CTAMP, the Colorado Threat Assessment and Management Protocol. The CTAMP is based on the work of the Secret Service and the U.S. Department of Education.
So what we're really looking at is when we give the full CTAMP training, it is a 6-hour training, so it's a full day training. And we really focus the entire morning on the history, background knowledge of how threat assessments were created from that work from the Secret Service. So really giving an overview of that background with the Department of Education, the U.S. Secret Service, and then how the documents and the questions kind of came to be. Then we really start to walk participants through behaviors and warning signs that they can see and recognize from students that are potentially a threat of violence. Then we start to work them through some of the recommendations in terms of what a threat assessment team should look like, who should be on that team, and the process itself. And then in the last portion of the training, we really focus on having those team members practice going through a scenario using the actual protocol with the trainers present so that they can ask questions, see what it feels like to do that threat assessment process in an actual scenario-based problem-solving model.
In 2019, the OSS received a Stop Violence grant from the National Institute of Justice to reevaluate the CTAMP.
We wanted to make it as effective and as efficient as possible. So we partnered with CSPV, is what we call the Center for the Study and Prevention of Violence. And so they started with an evaluation in the beginning of our training to make sure that it was being done with fidelity and that we were accomplishing what we hoped to accomplish with the training. Fortunately, we discovered that we were, that it was being delivered with fidelity, and it was also increasing people's knowledge and their confidence in doing threat assessments.
And the work doesn't stop there with CSPV, as many more grants are being awarded to protect our schools. Enter Dr. Sarah Goodrum, a sociologist and lead researcher for the Prevention Science Program at CU Boulder. Her violence prevention project was a complete success that will aid immensely in reporting violence concerns involving multiple tiers of intervention.
Over the last 3 years, I've had a grant from the Department of Homeland Security to deliver some of these strategies at the University of Colorado Boulder. And we received that grant following the shooting that happened at the King Supers in Boulder. And that tragedy, where 10 people died, led us to ask the university's police department, are there any things that we in the prevention science program at CU Boulder could be doing to help support violence prevention efforts on campus at CU Boulder? The public health approach has multiple tiers of intervention. And in this project from the Department of Homeland Security, we have been building a public awareness campaign to raise awareness about the warning signs for violence and strategies for reporting those warning signs to people who can help.
Goodrum's partnership with the OSS redeveloped CTAMP into a much more efficient machine in which the communities and the response forces both presented astounding progress.
We did see that knowledge of threat assessment and the protocol increased as a result of the training.
Additionally, her public awareness campaign was launched in the fall of 2023 and partnered with Boulder County to promote Colorado's Safe to Tell program. To those unfamiliar, Safe to Tell is a public safety hotline designed for swift anonymous reporting on safety concerns. According to KDVR, the 2024 school year was a record-breaking success as reports throughout Colorado rose up 23%.
We've been delivering that campaign through training presentations to audiences on campus, through social media posts, and through flyers on campus. And prior to the start of the campaign, the university's police department was receiving maybe one tip a semester from Colorado's Safe to Tell system. And the number of tips have increased to approximately 30 to 35 a semester as a result of our public awareness campaign. campaign.
But most notably still is the development of the Targeted Violence Lethality Assessment Protocol, a tool produced for exploring the potential risk an individual poses for engaging in targeted violence, and is used during a law enforcement officer's call about a person of concern.
We use the United States Secret Service's 11 questions for threat assessment to guide the development of the tool. We added a 12th question about mental health concerns. And then once we had the list of 12 questions in the protocol, we reviewed those questions with law enforcement professionals, mental health professionals, the Boulder County District Attorney's Office, the Department of Homeland Security, the Anti-Defamation League, and others in the LGBTQ+ community to look at the questions, consider whether they thought the questions were helpful in addressing both risks for targeted violence and risk for hate-based crime. And then we use that feedback to fine-tune the questions and the training we've developed.
Unfortunately, this protocol is still being piloted and will not spread outside of Boulder County for a few more years until all verified research is completed. Colorado's latest development in gun safety and education is a growing community of worried and headstrong educators and school staff who volunteered to take firearms classes for the sake of protecting their children in classrooms. Welcome to Faster, Colorado.
What I was one of the first educators that went to Faster so that my staff could be trained. After the shootings were happening, 2016, 2017, I had to go to the board, to my school board, to be able to say, these things are happening. And after having a first responders drill to where we enacted some type of injuries and the first responders were coming, that it took over 17 minutes before any type of law enforcement was able to show up to our school.
That was Tim Kistler, program manager of Faster, Colorado, who was previously a superintendent in the Peyton School District, a rural school near Colorado Springs. After a long process of verification with the school board and staff, Peyton District was allowing volunteers to receive world-class firearms training. But being licensed isn't easy.
In all of our experiences after we do the application and oral interviews, we make sure that they know how to use a firearm, how to be able to manipulate when you have malfunctions on a firearm, to be able to go to the class. So a lot of the vetting of whether the person can take pressure, how do they respond to people. Typically, we ask that somebody is in a school for at least 1 year so that we know how they react in certain situations. We have that observation vetting to be able to see how they work with people, handle people, and what would happen in the years after.
After proving 100% excellence in the preliminary vetting, candidates also need to prove themselves in the Peace Officers Standards and Training, or POST, which is an assessment on handgun proficiency that all law enforcement needs to be competent at. But Faster holds their candidates to a much higher standard than law enforcement.
So what we've done is we've taken that POST qualification and we've actually added 2 shots to it to make it a little bit more difficult than what law enforcement needs to do. And not all law enforcement agencies require 100% passage, but we do. So it's a little bit more difficult and we require 100% passage. So every year they're passing that same test, just like law enforcement.
Laura Carno, the founder of Faster, took inspiration from a similar program in Ohio and hired a full staff of active duty law enforcement to teach their volunteers. The Faster program consists of 4 increasingly difficult classes, with volunteers being dedicated for up to 8 years of training.
Over the last years, we have trained folks from over 40 districts in Colorado, and we've seen over 300 people.
Additionally to firearms training, Faster provides support in all vital response practices.
And again, it's not just about training how to use a firearm. You have, de-escalation drills. You have simulations to where you're training in case of a situation. And you also have medical training to where you're learning to deal with injuries.
Most importantly, the identities of the armed staff are kept confidential for a variety of reasons.
And if you think about this from a bad guy standpoint, if a bad guy wanted to came in and wanted to do significant harm, if they knew the exact people who were armed, they could kill those people first. They could start their killing away from those people. It would not make the school as safe as it could possibly be. What the deterrent effect is somebody who is intending to do harm, if they know that it's an armed school, they are left with the assumption that it could be anybody. And that is what is making the school safer.
And the school districts are welcoming faster training with open arms as more schools in Colorado are adapting to the changing times. Progress started quietly with smaller rural schools in need of help, but the effects are slowly spreading into our suburban school districts. Laura claims it is unlikely that Boulder County or Denver Public Schools will accept this policy, but those families who support the changes are eager to transfer to districts who are proactively seeking new ways to protect their children. With all of these resources, many people might wonder, how do all 178 school districts of Colorado afford all of these innovations and improvements? Here's the Office of School Safety on security arrangements.
Actually, probably about 90% of our school districts in Colorado are insured by the Colorado School District Self-Insurance Pool, which we refer to as SIDSIP. And they have had policies for years now and guidelines about training and arming of any school staff members.
But what about the schools that don't use the self-insurance pool? Again, here is Laura from FASTER.
For the schools that don't use the self-insurance pool, there is a brokerage in Colorado, in Colorado Springs, that helps schools that are faster connected, our charter schools. And so they don't use the self-insurance pool. So we have connected with a broker that can help get those charter schools into an insurance program. The main guy at that brokerage actually came to observe, and then said, I should really go through this as a student to make sure I understand how, you know, is this a hard enough class and that sort of thing. So they've taken their role really seriously.
But on top of the insurance pools that financially support many different innovations like arming staff, there is a variety of grants that both urban and rural schools can apply to.
We really make sure that the grants are just as accessible for every school, whether they are rural or more urban suburban, so that everyone has an equal opportunity to access those grants and get the funding for those grants.
Colorado has experienced great strides in protecting our communities thus far, and the efforts will continue indefinitely. The University of Colorado Boulder is a leading partner in our improvement efforts, so I urge you to explore all of the resources and talk to experts on campus about what you can do as an individual, as a group, or as a community to keep our youth safe. On the national level, it is becoming increasingly harder to combat youth violence. Here's what happened. On September 25th of this year, over 700 arrests of children were made in the span of nearly 3 weeks in 45 states. The New York Times stated that all of these arrests occurred after these children insinuated school threats of any kind. All of these arrests were the immediate impact after the Georgia Appalachee school shooting. Why did these threats occur? Meet Dr. James Densley, an Oxford doctorate and international expert on criminology and violence.
Generally, school mass shooters are themselves current or former students at the schools that they target. And it may be because they have some sort of grievance with that school. But what predates all of that is that there's a lot of early childhood trauma that lays a foundation for what becomes eventually a sort of existential crisis for that young person. They feel like the world is not seeing them for who they really are, that they're not getting their support and their needs met. And the crisis is a change in their usual behavior. It kind of overwhelms their usual coping mechanisms. It's usually very noticeable.
Densley's expert theory in his book, The Violence Project, consists of four causal elements of mass shootings: let's introduce the first element, the concept of person in crisis.
What happens when they reach that crisis point is they start to try and make sense of it by looking for other models of behavior. And unfortunately, when we have a problem in life today, all of us do the same thing. We Google it. And young people do that too. They Google it. But unfortunately for this small group of individuals, it sends them sort of tumbling down the rabbit hole into the darkest corners of the internet, where mass shooters are heroized, where certain ideologies to make sense of your feelings are there to give you a sense of belonging and purpose broader than you might have experienced previously. And this kind of radicalizes young people into the idea that a mass shooting is a good solution to one's problems.
The second element consists of the perpetrator being misdirected into affiliating with mass shooters for lack of better management of their circumstances. Here's the copycat phenomena.
Number one is the copycat phenomena that is associated with these types of mass shootings. Mass shooters tend to be inspired by others, and there is a sense that there is a copycat piece to this.
The third element is the most vital hint in prevention of these incidents. About 80% of perpetrators project their intentions to do harm ahead of time, yet many of these warning signs are overlooked. Densley and his team had conducted interviews with perpetrators of mass shooters, as well as averted perpetrators who never succeeded in executing their plans. The responses were appalling.
And in both those instances, we've asked the question, could something have stopped you? And they all say the same thing, which is yes. And often it is, anyone could have stopped me, but nobody did.
And finally, the last element in Densley's theory is the inevitable access to a firearm. The saddening statistics of our society revolves around the access to firearms that our youth are experiencing.
The reality, the sad reality, is that a gun goes off in a school every day in this country, and often we don't hear about it, and that there is the spillover of community violence that is still impacting our schools on a daily basis. So if you look at the data, for instance, a colleague of mine, David Reedman, who runs the K-12 school shooting database, he tracks every time a gun is brandished or is fired on a school campus on a daily basis. And he finds that nationwide, we generally have one of these incidents every school day. And those incidents are not necessarily the traditional school shootings that we think about and read about in the news media, but it can be everything from a suicide. It can be an accidental shooting. It can be a police officer discharging their weapon. It can be a shooting in the parking lot. It can be a shooting Friday night at a football game. It can be a gang-related incident that spilled out from the community into the grounds of a school, not necessarily during school hours. And then in addition to that, of course, you have events that do occur within the hallways and classrooms of the school building.
Unfortunately, none of these 700 children arrested understand the severity of their threats, so ignoring their jokes and hoaxes would be a disservice to our public safety. Again, here is Chris from the OSS.
Unfortunately, I don't think that students always understand how serious this is when they make a threat that is not true. And I'm hoping that there'll be more education both in schools and in families to students that this is why we don't say these kinds of things in an airport, for instance. So we can't say these kinds of things online or even to friends as a joke, because we can't take these things as a joke. We have to take them all seriously.
Many people question why such a harsh reaction was a necessary response, with many children left traumatized after their experiences being held in custody or convicted, with almost 10% of those arrested being under 12 years old.
It's all very well and good trying to deter your way out of this through arrests, but you've got two conflicting problems going on. Number one is we want to encourage people to threaten and to report, because that's how you intervene. So if you criminalize that process, what might happen is that people don't threaten in advance, and then bad things happen when we have no knowledge of them. The other thing is we don't want to be criminalizing young people for jokes and hoaxes. We have to find more restorative and reintegrative ways of dealing with those young people, so we're not giving them criminal records and felony convictions in their teenage years, which create barriers to a successful life later on. Just like you wouldn't really, back in the 90s or the 80s, put a kid in prison if they pulled the fire alarm.
As gun safety becomes a more nuanced conversation in our society, it is important to learn the right ways to incorporate the correct policies with the correct incentives.
School mass shooters are often suicidal, and they're intending for their school shooting to be a final act. You don't get away with a school shooting. There's a resolution at the end of it. So if you know that there are armed police or armed teachers, armed security within a school, that's not actually a surprise to a school kid, because they walk past that security, they're enamored with it, with all the training that they do in the school building on a day-to-day basis. So if the incentive is I want to die in the act, and now I have more means to ensure that that happens, instead of deterring young people, you might actually be creating a perverse incentive structure for young people to target schools.
In the end, our communities should also be involved in helping our children to regulate their safety and health.
So that's what we really need to be doing. We need to be building multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary teams that include law enforcement and criminal justice partners, but also include everybody else too. Usually what we use as an analogy for this is it's like different pieces of the jigsaw puzzle. And law enforcement is holding one piece, and social services is holding another, and maybe it's mental health or a medical service provider that's holding another, and a teacher has one, and a peer has one. But unfortunately, they're not putting the pieces of the puzzle together to see the bigger picture. And instead, that young person sort of falls through the cracks in the puzzle. So what we really need is better information sharing among those different services, and ensuring that we're not just isolating our interventions to things that are occurring directly in the school, or only in the community, or only with law enforcement, or only with the family, but actually that these things are happening simultaneously, and that they're talking to one another.
It might feel daunting, the amount of work required to keep our children safe, but our experts are optimistic.
What makes education best for all? And we do these things not just because they might prevent a school shooting, but also because they're just best practice in education. So there's an element of, can we get smaller class sizes? Can we get more adults in a building to have eyes on kids and to be able to work with them on a more individualized basis? Can we provide young people with opportunities to see beyond the school, what the future might hold for them? Can we give them a reason to live and thrive and feel successful? And all of that comes down to the culture within those schools and what they do to make young people feel seen and feel included. And a lot of that can be improved if we invest in all the things that we know that make schools work better. And a lot of this really comes down to building relationships with young people and making them feel like they belong. Because when a young person feels safe and secure and they feel a sense of belonging, they don't want to perpetrate this type of a crime.
Thank you to all of our experts who dedicate their lives to the safety of our communities. Special thanks to the wonderful staff of the Office of School Safety, Dr. Sarah Goodrum, Faster, Colorado, and Dr. James Densley. We commend you all. We invite all listeners to acquaint themselves with the public resources available for their safety and comfort. Safe to Tell can be reported by calling 1-877-542-7233, also available through their mobile app, or by texting S2TCO to 738-477. And if you ever have any questions about what your school district or community is doing for the protection of your child, be involved in positive ways by having open communication with each other. From Radio 1190, I'm Ethel Yegudaeva.